Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
Yep, In the Loop here on Sports Radio 610. Happy noon to you. That's not a thing that people say, just the thing that I said as we are halfway through our program on this Friday. Hope that your Friday is going very well. Is it just Lion season, or is this a possibility? Is this a big moment in Nick Caserio's draft life if this draft scout and reporter is correct? All right. Shout out to everybody listening, and you can get involved on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610.
The Texas Hammer!
That's right, Jim. And then also there's the Mo Karam injury live streams, both on YouTube and Twitch.
We keep a 100.
And so hit us up. And shout out to 713. So thank you guys. Listen on YouTube during this drive to Phoenix is keeping me going. Yeah. Hope that you're driving out there comfortably. Be safe out there. What you driving to Phoenix for? I'm interested.
Yeah.
If you feel free to let us know.
Is that the same one that had to use the bathroom?
Yeah.
It might be. It might be.
How far of a drive is that? That got to be a nice little drive.
Yeah. He said 5 hours ago. Well, El Paso is like, what, 10?
I've never driven to El Paso.
Yeah,
I don't think I ever will drive to El Paso. Like, with no shade to El Paso, just it's all the time in between.
Little fun fact, it might be more than 10. Little fun fact about how big Texas is, and I'm sure you've heard this before if you haven't.
You could drive 24 hours in Texas and still in Texas.
If you drive from Houston to Los Angeles, you're more than halfway when you're in El Paso.
Yeah, you spend more time in Texas than you would in Arizona, New Mexico, and California. Yep. Why? And that's part of the reason.
That's how it is when I stayed in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You spend most of the time in Pennsylvania trying to get to New York.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And that's an 8-hour drive.
You were in the middle. You were in Pennsylvania, too. You were like, what is this?
Yes, exactly.
What's happening here? All right. Are you familiar with Matt Miller?
Yes, very much so.
Matt Miller, draft scout, does some good work in this space. He had an interesting kind of revelation of sorts, and it had to do with the Texans and Nick Caserio.
Yeah, look, he was talking about, quote, multiple GMs, or he said executives. Multiple executives believe that the Houston Texans have the highest interest on Kelvin Banks. The University of Texas tackle, could play guard, et cetera, et cetera. And it just got me thinking, if you like Kelvin Banks that much, and Nick Caserio, as we all know, is not afraid to move up in the draft, you kind of have to move up in the draft, don't you? I mean, you can wait. If you like him that much, you can maybe wait and maybe think that he could drop to 25. But he's either the number one or number two tackle in this draft by a lot of you know, experts, so to speak. So if he's still there at 15, you're not the only one thinking this, you know?
Yeah, I think so, right? Yeah. I think you broke it down pretty well. Like, the best tackles as looked at from this space. Although, yeah, he's considered highly, however.
Will Campbell, Kelvin Banks, what's the other one that's always up there?
Armand Membu out of Missouri. I almost said Mississippi some or other. And I'm like, nope, that's not true. But yeah, like, he is in that space. Although, interestingly enough, I like coming back around and looking at –
the Beast,
mm-hmm.
Dane Brugler. Dane Brugler has him listed as a guard. You know, obviously he's one of those guys that we know can slide in, and he likely will start his career sliding in. But no, he's regarded pretty highly in
these
draft
spaces. It's
one of
those three, by and large.
Although, yeah, he seems like he could also be like a second round. Like, he could make it to you. But, yeah, there's teams mm-hmm. that are interested all through there. And especially with this draft, it's not as easy to kind of slot guys in. Like, different teams definitely have different evaluations of these guys who all seem to be in the same kind of bucket
mm-hmm.
of talent. So, like, you might like one guy more than the other. But if you really like your guy, particularly if you like him above the rest of the guys in that bucket, you trade up. I think that's my question, though. How much more could you like Kelvin Banks over some of the other options that you have mm-hmm. here, especially when you, if you talk about tackles? You know, my guy, Josh Connerly Jr. Mm-hmm. is there. Tyler Booker is one of those guards, if you're looking more guard-wise, where he seems like he fits exactly
yeah.
into the mantra and the MO that the Texans have. So I think this is an interesting kind of thought process on would you move up, especially for this guy, if these all of these executives, these quote multiple executives that Matt Miller is putting out there, believe that this team, this organization has a certain infatuation with him. I just wonder how much more do you have to like him than some of these other guys? Hell, Gray Zabel, who we've seen many draft scouts, including our very own, the homie, mm-hmm. John Harris, you know, really marvel over. Like, how much more do you have to like Kelvin Banks?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's the flexibility of guard and tackle to then move up those, you know, a number of spots to go get him. Maybe seven spots probably fair to move up into that kind of
right.
low teens area to get him compared to, you know, sticking and picking with what it feels like is a pretty robust amount of offensive linemen that could be there for you at 25.
But this is what is so interesting to me. You know, that could be lying season. You know, we talk about it all the time. Even other executives might be, you know, the Texans might be taking them off the scent, so to speak. Or not, because we're less than 2 weeks away from the draft. I mean, you know, it's getting real. So you have to decide, is that real or is that just lying season at work here, at play here? But if it's not, Nick Caserio is not afraid to do that.
No.
No, we know that.
That is correct.
You know, we know he's not afraid to move up. So if he's there at, you know, as you mentioned, 13, 14, 15, wherever, and he makes a move, this is where the second part of my thought comes into play. He and his staff, I should say, they got a shaky record evaluating.
Sure.
They've got a shaky record
evaluating
offensive line.
There you go. I was like, you got to finish that out, because I think that you have
they're
to
really
give
good
credit.
Elsewhere.
Yeah.
They're almost they're good almost everywhere else in terms of evaluation. But you go back, obviously the one that stands out is Kenyon Green. That was just a bad evaluation or bad fit, however, you know, whatever you want to say. I mean, Juice Scruggs and Blake Fisher were picks that we're still not sure of.
And here's the question that I mean, we probably all have kind of considered in some ways, is how much of that is the evaluation, how much of that is the inability to coach them up?
Sure,
I mean,
or fit, like, so that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
No, and you're right with fit, but I think also specifically, like, with offensive linemen, and I think I've heard Seth say this, and I mean, it's something that you kind of hear from various places. It's rare that you just drop in an offensive lineman, even the best ones that you draft, mm-hmm. and they're immediately at NFL level. It's one of the reasons why I have always talked about the fact that teams aren't often giving away good offensive linemen, because just like quarterback, it's one of the most scarce positions of having somebody playing at like a real high NFL level. And like, it's just hard to do this mm-hmm. at the NFL level, particularly offensive line. And so even the guys that are like coming in from the prep at level to the college or to the NFL level, mm-hmm. like those guys still need, or the college level to the NFL level, those guys still need development.
Mm-hmm.
And how much, especially when you see a few guys that have maybe not been, you know, gangbusters hits, how much of that do you then go, well, you just fired Bobby Slowick and, you know, you've had not necessarily the most optimal, the best offensive coaching. How much of that has been that you haven't had the right coaching to bring out and advance offensive line talent, especially because that's necessary? There's very few instances that you're going to get somebody that you draft and immediately is incredible mm-hmm. at the NFL level like you would at other positions.
Well, that leads to the biggest question of all. You know, if you have the backdrop of they may well really like Kelvin Banks a lot, they may well want to trade up if he starts to drop into a kind of a, you know, a sweet spot for them to make a deal. Yet Nick Caserio and his staff don't have the best record, you know, evaluating offensive linemen. That leads to the question, would you want him to do it?
No. No, and that's even before we get to, like, however you feel about the possibility of their evaluation prowess, which, I think, obviously, it helps make my point more. This just feels like a deep enough draft where I don't like the instance of moving up in that instance. And I still leave open the possibility of maybe you just like your guy, and that you have to have a certain conviction in yourself that if you like a guy so much, you get to that place where you go and do it. But I don't know, and maybe this helps, right? Pewter Report is an outlet that covers the Bucks, and you'll understand why I bring this up here in a second. The Bucks general manager, Jason Light, apparently he says that there have been years where he thought about trading down more than others. And worth noting that they have the 19th pick in the first round. This year, he continues, it'll all be about what happens and who falls to them. He doesn't foresee as many teams wanting to trade up across the league. And so if there's not a lot of teams wanting to trade up, maybe that makes it so that the opportunity of making a deal with the team looking to trade back isn't as costly or what have you. But ultimately, I still then take that to the place of there's probably not many reasons that teams are seeing to want to trade up. And I don't know that in offensive line, I feel so strongly about one of these guys over the others than just kind of sitting in that place. In fact, like, I've been kind of pondering, and I want to ask you, what do you think is the most likely thing for Nick Caserio to do? Because Nick has done all of these. Trade up, like we've been talking about here. Trade back, because I know there's some people that have been asking, especially if a team really likes a quarterback in that early second round and maybe just wants to have the opportunity at that fifth round option or that fifth year option, trading into the later portions of the first round to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
25 is one of those places. Like, trade back from there or stick and pick at 25. What do you think is, like, the most likely option?
Yeah, I've been saying I thought they would just stick where they are, and you know, there are options there. But, boy, they really seem like they're going to focus on the offense big time. It may not even be for an offensive lineman. You know, this was the one scenario that Matt Miller threw out there. But, you know, if there's a running back, if there's a, you know.
Wait, first round?
No, well, I'm just saying, okay, if somebody.
Or just moving in general. Yeah, okay, yeah, sorry, general. I was stuck on 25 so much.
In the first round, I don't see them moving up for anything maybe other than an offensive lineman like this that they really like, that they really want to plug and play. But in the first round, I think the most likely thing for me right now is a slight movement up, like a slight, if something crazy happens. You know, and there's a lineman there, whether it's Connerly or Banks or Zabel or whomever, at 20, you know, or 21, then I could see a slight movement up. I think that would be I'd be leaning that way.
And this is an interesting perspective from 8-2. They said they think if you think Nick has an issue with evaluating offensive line talent, then you absolutely want Nick then to move up and grab the clear number 2 left tackle. I hear your thought process there. The reason why I disagree there is, then you are using more capital to justify this. And it's probably not the fair way of evaluating, but let's be honest. We're all going to bring this up. If you utilize capital to draft up, and oftentimes that means having less opportunities, less dart throws, less draft picks, to then take a guy, and then that guy does not pan out.
Yeah.
You end up in an even funnier place because you utilized more capital to get to that player. Comparatively, where I believe strongly in the idea that you have a number of guys of a similar caliber, and then it's really more about situation and development. That feels like, it feels like this is one of those years that absolutely plays to that, where if you stick and pick, like, you will get a guy that comes to you in a place that is comfortable. Plus, it's not like you've done the work to give yourself a little bit of flexibility. It's not like you need a specific, like, I need this particular tackle or I need this particular guard. You could probably do with either. And so that opens up, like, the possibilities of the talented players that if they reach you at 25, that you should probably be comfortable with if they fit into all the other things that you have, which, of course, that's always the portion of this that's tough, trying to evaluate these things from the outside looking in, is we don't know how they handle some of the other portions of these evaluations. Hell, even the testing stuff that we have, we know that they don't value nearly as highly. They value the tape, which we have some level of understanding of, you know, through draft scouts and what you can see watching these respective players' college games. But then also the interviews and how these guys, you know, relate and how they come off to these guys, D'Amico and everybody in that building. Those are portions that they value highly that we can't really add in to this evaluation process that I think would be pivotal and very important to in the decision to move up.
It is funny, though, because, like, if they stand pat at 25 and draft a tackle, you know, whomever that might be, or a guard, whomever that might be, I don't really feel like you automatically just mentally believe that he's going to be a day one starter, because 25 is sort of a gray area, you know, where you would expect him to be a starter at some point.
Yeah.
But maybe not a day one starter. But if you move up at all, you're sending the message, we love that guy, we wanted that guy, and you almost put more pressure that he's going to have to be a starter.
But they have competition, Lopez.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
no, he doesn't, I mean, doesn't have to.
That's what they say.
He got competition.
That's what I've been told. Yeah. So it's interesting to see just how much, you know, if he really likes a guy, if he moves up at all, that's going to be a guy that that's going to have a lot of pressure, and the pressure lands on Nick Caserio too, because, and I'm not saying the guy is just, you know, bumbling around trying to evaluate offensive linemen. I'm saying his track record hadn't been great.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. From the 832, can you have too many darts? It's a good philosophical question. Obviously, in this instance, just to make it clear, the darts that I'm talking about is just picks, opportunities at selecting in what is, in my estimation, more of kind of a lottery, right? Like, obviously, you're doing your evaluation to maximize the chances that one of these picks hits. Mm-hmm. But it is still, like, there's still opportunities and downsides and all these things. We may have more picks than we can realistically roster this year, possibly. I understand. Like, you have 7 picks. But
oh, I don't know. That's that. I don't know about that.
I understand the thought process. My thing about it is, and of course, you have the future picks as well that you've added with the Laramie Tunsil deal. So you have, I believe you have 8 picks in the 2026 draft as of right now. The thing that I would more want than anything is seeing is if you can utilize that amount of picks to push yourself further up and give yourself more of the more beneficial picks. You have four picks in the first, 89 of the first 89 picks, but then you don't have a fourth, correct? If you could leverage some of those picks.
Yeah, that's what Harris was talking about.
Right.
To get a fourth.
If you can leverage some of those picks to help you move up into those spaces, because it feels like this is definitely a draft where the top end is okay, but then those hardy middle rounds, like they're calling this a starter draft, where maybe you're not going to have the incredible top end level of the players, but the starter caliber players are all in there.
It's a meaty, you know, late first.
Just meat and potatoes draft.
Yeah. There's a lot of 5'9", you know, pocket rockets.
We also have confirmation that John Harris loves that drop. But yeah, if you can get, for me, it's like the more of those opportunities in those spaces to give yourself chances. But yeah, I don't know that I would want necessarily to move up in that first round situation. But hey, this is the thing, right? This is where Nick Caserio, with the more information and with that more intel, like maybe they are in a place where they look at it and they're like, hey, Kelvin Banks is indeed, head and shoulders, above everybody else. Then I think maybe feet.
They like him that much.
I don't know that. I would be interested to see what gets them to that place in particular.
He is head and feet above all the rest.
But yeah, go ahead. Ultimately, go ahead and do that. But I think that you open yourself up more to the possibility of being wrong. So I would not love it. Mm-hmm. Is basically where I come down on there. And yeah, you're right, Cornbread. I think that getting a running back also matters there as well.
Yep.
And 832.
There's a lot of 5'9", you know, pocket rockets.
832 comes back. Banks is not of a similar caliber. Absolutely, by consensus, the second best left tackle in this draft. All right, if you say so. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to completely go away. Like, I like Kelvin Banks, but I do think that there's other players of a certain caliber that is that would get you what you want, especially with Josh Connolly. The thing that I have difference with Kelvin Banks is that it seems like there's a lot more upside there as well. And I'm thinking about not just this year, but what it looks like going forward. However it goes, right? Like, this is the thing about the draft. There's a lot of interpretation left within there. And then there's always that lack of knowing exactly how it's going to happen. That's that is the dark
process
of this. Are they lying? It is indeed lying season. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it's time for our Lunchtime Confessions, which are presented by the Men's Clinic. We'll get into that next.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reggie and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, presented by the Men's Clinic on Sports Radio 610. Watch this.
Here's a team that the Rockets could face that has really started to worry me. And so I listened to this this morning. I wasn't watching it live. And I know it's a little disrespectful to the Rockets, but as much as you might want to disagree with Charles Barkley, I don't disagree with him.
The Clippers might be the second best team in the West. I don't think that's crazy, though.
When healthy,
but they're healthy. Hey, Kawhi Leonard's amazing to me, man.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he is amazing.
Huh?
Yes.
I've never seen a guy.
Never.
Duke never plays basketball.
Never.
And comes back
like he played been playing somewhere else.
Like he was playing in overseas and just came back and played here. Because he does not miss a beat. He doesn't look hurt, Chuck.
He does not.
It's amazing.
Over the Rockets, the Lakers and Nuggets.
Yes, I think the Clippers are the best team after the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Man, I'm telling you, I broached the topic, I guess, earlier this week, maybe late last week.
You did.
Yeah, they were playing pretty darn well. Kawhi's getting off a little bit on consistently. They might be the second best team in the conference right now, when healthy, as Chuck said.
I mean, when healthy, if we're being honest, and maybe you say the Thunder have been kind of coasting a little bit, they might be the best team. Yeah. I have not done my, you know me, I can be a little bit
you
of a nerd.
You got to dig in some.
I could be a nerd sometimes, go look at these numbers. I have realized I have not jumped up and just like played around with these numbers a little bit. Looking at advanced stats over the last 10 games, and maybe that's a little shallow. Maybe I should look at the last 15 or what have you. You look at last 15 games as well. You look at net rating, so offensive rating compared with defensive rating. Like, they have the best net rating by a long shot.
Yeah.
Like, they have been scoring and they have been locking up the other teams, and it is just, I did not realize that the Clippers were on this time. My bad.
On the other hand, still the Clippers.
That's the
Clippers
only
clip is what you're saying.
Still the Clippers.
And see, that's the only thing, because if we're saying it might be a scary team for the Rockets, then I can kind of roll with it a little bit. But the second best team in the West means they will probably be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
If you just eliminate
the Western Conference Finals,
if you just eliminate the jersey, I really do think they are at least, as you put it, second best team, at least second best.
Yeah. Now the thing with them is always that injury question is a big one, right? Are somewhat arthritic knees of Kawhi show up where he misses a couple of games, and now you're expecting James Harden to carry you through in a way that he can to some degree, but also depends on, you know, what the teams look like across from him. And then, of course, as always is with the NBA, what's the matchup, right? Matchups dictate so much of this. Sometimes we don't even acknowledge how much the matchup matters here. But yeah, no, this Clippers team. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I was wilding. What was it last week when I was like, I'd like to see them? No, I wouldn't. I was stupid. Probably still am, to be completely honest. These are my confessions. I don't think I'm stupid about this in particular, though. There is something that I look forward to about getting older, and Gary Player, you know, the legendary golfer.
That guy's amazing.
Exhibited it perfectly. Perfectly. He was obviously, you know, he's at the Masters because he is a dignitary that is supposed to be as such. But he was asked a question, mind you, about eating fast food. Like, that was kind of funny. He was at, because Tiger Woods in 97, when he won the Masters, he famously ate Arby's every single night, which, speaking of trying to find yourself the right accommodations for a bathroom. But he said, I was wondering, when was the last time you had any fast food, Gary Player? I will read you verbatim where Gary Player's response was. You ready?
Yes.
Gary Player. Well, you don't reach 90 as I do if you eat a bunch of crap. I could tell you that. But that's your choice. Everybody has a choice. I want to live to 100 because I love people. I love golf. I just love life. Continuing. I've got a young girlfriend. I've changed my life. How about that? At 90, finding a girlfriend. Tom is not as old as me, but he's also found a new one. I'll tell you what, guys. You or your wife is going to die. One of the spouses are going to die, and it's not the end of life. So many people, that does happen, and they get so disheartened that they don't think that they should continue life. The greatest gift bestowed upon a man or a woman is life. So my ambition is to reach 100. So I went to India, and I met with my gerontologist, and he gave me 11 things to work on, which I hear to... it's still going.
That guy's amazing.
I love it so much.
He's amazing.
I want to get old and just accost people with my conversation. Like, old people can just talk to you about anything. You have to sit there and listen. They can go anywhere. It doesn't matter what they're talking about. You have to give them a level of respect
where you just listen to them.
We talked about it yesterday.
Especially with the older people with way more pep in the step.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude, yesterday, the honorary T, at the Masters, he was one of them, he and Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson. He hit his drive 255 yards.
Lovely.
255.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Incredible. Yeah, so he was just like, you asked me about fast food? I will not talk about that. You know what I want to talk about?
Yeah.
My new young girlfriend, who, mind you, young is 83.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
I was thinking maybe 60s.
Nope.
Yeah.
83. But he's like, hey, I got this young hotness over here. Let me tell you about it, young fella.
Look at her.
I'm trying to get to 100, young fella. And it's like, I asked you about fast. You know what?
It's about cool. Fast it's food. All right. These are my
confessions. So I watched that porn movie John Lopez watched.
What?
Oh, I'm glad. Was what? I wrong?
What?
Was I wrong?
I watched the movie.
It is not pornographic actually. Mm-hmm. Well, not, I guess, legally. All right, well, I just let you handle that. I was trying to make sure we recover, but I don't know what to
do. I got to confess, I feel like Lopez was overreacting a little bit.
Oh, to Anora?
It was at least 30 to 45 minutes of the first 30 to 45 minutes. Anora is the movie. And if you weren't listening earlier, I said...
But porn is a stretch.
Dude.
It was a lot of love
dude.
Making.
Well,
But it wasn't like, oh my God, what in the world is...
But it was 40 minutes at least. The first 40 minutes. Go back.
You watch it again. You didn't watch it right, back. He said.
No, this is my other confession, mm-hmm. too. Did that movie win some awards?
Best picture.
It did.
That movie was awful.
Yes.
Man. Like, I don't know what the, like, dog, I thought it was like a serious movie or a romantic movie. Mm-hmm. And then it became like a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a drama and then it became a comedy.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? And then the way the movie ended was kind of confusing.
Well, I didn't see the end.
Yeah, I seen the end. I tell you what, like that, the first, I guess, 40 minutes you watch, yeah. I don't know how much you watched, but it was no more that love making.
Is that right?
That movie was so bad. I couldn't believe, how did that win Best Picture,
Best
man?
Best Picture.
Show me how did that win Best Picture, man? Because that was a rough movie to watch. Me and my wife was just sitting there like, huh?
Why did y'all watch it?
I thought it was a good movie. I heard Lopez kind of was like...
Well, I started watching it because it was Best Picture. I said, well, I got to see this.
Yeah, so
and
I'm
then
like,
40
you know
minutes
what?
In, I'm like, enough with the sex scenes. Let's get going here.
I tried to step outside the box a little bit. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? Let me see what this about.
Mm-hmm.
Got through the sex scenes. It wasn't as bad as you said.
It was pretty bad.
But
every which way is
that
how
movie
I'll put
was
it.
Bad.
From the A32, John watched the wrong movie.
Maybe I did click on
probably
the wrong
did.
Thing.
Yeah, because it wasn't as bad. Because my wife would have been like, "Whoa," she would have said something like that. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But the actual movie was bad, man. Mm-hmm. I don't see how this movie won anything.
Mm-hmm.
This was borderline. Tubi movie to me, man.
Tubi.
Yeah, no, nah, this was a bad movie, man. Yeah. I don't see how that movie won anything.
Well, it was... I never saw the end of it. I was like, all right, that's enough. Let's move on. Let's go watch Frasier or something.
Ah,
like,
yes. These
are my confessions. All right, so you know me by now. I am not an advocate or a believer in jinxes and superstitions.
Oh, I love... I'm waiting for the butt here.
Uh-oh.
I'm feeling nervous about this much confidence I have in Lance McCullers coming back.
Yeah, like, so stop mentioning him. Don't look
like,
at him.
Like we talked about it earlier. I was talking about it yesterday with my son. We always go out and go to his house for dinner on Thursdays. I'm like, yeah, I think he's going to do it this time. I think he's going to come back. Got to start tomorrow, Saturday, I mean. I think.
That's tomorrow.
Last night it wasn't.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And so. I'm like, I think McCullough's going to come back. And then this morning when we talked about it, I'm like, man, I'm jinxing this, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in jinxes or superstitions, but I think I'm jinxing.
I don't believe in jinxes or superstitions either, but I told you. I feel uncomfortable every time I mention it, and I do believe in jinxes as far as they allow me to do things that I already wanted to do. So it's going to be your fault.
I'll take it.
Let you know.
I'll take it because I'm the one that's been the most skeptical of him ever coming back.
Yeah, I kind of stopped paying attention to the whole, oh, he had another rehab start, all that stuff, because we went through this before. And then afterwards, it's like, oh, we see some more swelling or a setback.
Soreness.
Yeah. So I'm just like, man, I don't care until he get in the Astros uniform and make a start or appearance
and
or whatever.
And finishes a start.
Yes. Yes. He need about three starts for me to be like, all right, I think he's back now.
Yeah.
I ain't doing that no more.
He gonna be standing up there accepting the Cy Young and figures gonna be like, I'm not sure.
That's
sure.
Only one good year.
Yeah, he gonna be 20 games in. I'm like, I think he about back.
I don't know.
Yeah.
These are my confessions. All right, so we were mentioning earlier, in fact, Painted Pendergrass was also mentioning earlier, Joe Flacco, back in our lives. He is signed a one-year deal with the Browns, and I think Sean was mentioning it as a great analogy. As one of those, you know, when you got someone over at the crib, but you ready for them to go, you're like, hey,
getting a little late,
you
know?
Turn off the lights, turn down the music.
I think I'm about to go and get to sleep. What you about to get into?
Yeah.
Where you headed to next? What's the next move for you?
And if they won't leave.
Yeah, they won't leave. I took that personally because I think I'm not quite that. I don't believe I'm that. But Figgy, you remember at your part, you had your party.
Yeah.
Who was one of the last people to leave?
Yeah, you was.
I was there. Yeah. I like hanging out. Yeah. I like chilling. Like if I went to a place, I'm here to be at the place. Now, I don't think that I overstay. However,
well, maybe others do.
I was like, maybe I need to go ask some people, but I like hanging out.
Yeah.
Did I overstay, Figgy? You could tell me if
I
did.
No, I don't think so because I think it was you, my boy Rocket. Mm-hmm. Y'all was kind of hanging around too. Like, I'm totally fine with it. I was kind of glad that everything went okay.
But what if the party didn't start at noon and started at 6 and he's there at 12:30?
12:30?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to stay too long.
Well, you say you just said you do.
Well, I said I hang out. I wait till the party. Like, I'm there till the party's over.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
But I'm not overstaying. And at least I help clean up too. Like, I'll do that.
Yeah, I think Lopez got me like that one time, man, because I felt like I overstayed. I think I brought something back to you.
Really?
I think I went over to your. I think I had to bring. I don't know if it was like a. I forgot what it was.
Yeah.
And y'all was like, oh, yeah, come have some wine. I'm like, all right, cool. Got a glass of wine, sitting there talking. And then Lopez do his typical Lopez thing. Like, all right, then. His wife was like, well, he got to finish his wine.
I don't even remember that.
And I'm like, let me kill his wine real quick.
He's like, no, Warner, let me throw this back right quick and get out of here.
I did that thing. Man. I don't even remember that.
Hit the old dusty trail.
You could tell when Lopez ready to go. Even in our little show meetings, all righty then.
Yep.
All righty then.
Stand up. Grab my backpack.
He'd be like, yep, good deal.
All right.
All righty then.
That's how we ended the segment, mind you. Nope, Lopez, we time to go.
You get in.
You overstand, Lopez.
You get in.
All right, good deal.
You do what you need to do, and then you get out.
Yep, that's right.
Good deal.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Those are our lunchtime confessions presented by the Men's Clinic. Shout out to Champ on the YouTube page. I appreciate the quote about life, talking about Gary Player. This last week has been hard. Today is the first anniversary of my best friend passing.
Oh.
Appreciate 610 being so awesome. Hey, love you.
Salute,
love
man.
You too, friend. Glad to be here for all of our listeners rocking with us on this Friday. All right, coming up next, if you could magically fix one Astro.
All right, then.
Who would you pick? Let's discuss that next.
Good deal.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adatula.
All right, if you could magically fix one singular Astro, who would you pick? 713-572-4610 is the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line.
The Texas Hammer!
Let us know what your answer is there. Also, keep that number in your mind because it's also going to come in useful in the 1 o'clock hour as we'll be giving away another pair of tickets to see Brian Regan, the comedian, at the Bayou Music Center on December 4th. So if you're a Brian Regan fan, comedy fan, keep it locked. We're going to give a pair of those tickets away again today. But all right, came about this, obviously looking at the Astros are in a tough place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, you know, Christian Walker particular is one of those guys who, you know, is in an interesting place because with Joe Espada, like, he hasn't worked with them a ton to help him get out of that place. And I was like, I feel like for Joe Espada, like, how can he work some of his guys into a better place? Like, obviously you can move some people around and line up or what have you, but it'd be nice if you could just, like, boom, you're good again.
Baseball pixie dust.
I was like, yeah, if you could just baseball pixie dust some of these dudes. But I was like, all right, if you had to limit it to one, and I guess ultimately trying to get to the root of who would be the most important guy to get going here. Who would you pick?
I really like this question because you texted it yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say the answer I gave you yesterday.
Oh, you came with a different one now.
I'm changing my mind.
I don't even remember what answer you gave me yesterday.
Christian Walker is what I said.
Oh, okay. And I think there's you can easily argue Christian Walker.
100%.
First baseman, they need him.
Four-hole hitter.
Yeah, all that stuff. What it does for the guys in front and behind him if he gets going. And maybe I'm overthinking this. I just feel like Yonner Diaz, offensively and defensively, if you could just pixie dust him. He doesn't have to be a 300 hitter, but driving some runs. Don't be an automatic out near the bottom of the lineup. Play some defense. What was that number that I saw the other day? 15 out of 16 runners have been successful stealing
correct.
Bases against the
that Astros. Is correct.
That is, I mean, that's unacceptable. Like just flat out.
I mean, especially, if you talk about the questions that you have defensively, mm-hmm. With the pressure that you have on the starting pitcher because of the offense.
Yes.
Man, like, free bases mm-hmm. is something you absolutely cannot give up. And that's another instance of free bases on top of walks.
Yeah, and he's, you know, we discussed this as well. I mean, there's been moments where it's on the pitcher, but there have been moments where he's not even framing pitches the way you would expect a big league catcher to at that level, you know, to frame pitches. So framing pitches, throwing people out, playing defense, just be productive offensively and give your lineup a little boost toward the bottom half of it. Am I overthinking that? Because I think he's crucial to what they can do.
No, I don't think you're overthinking that at all. What's interesting, though, is I was thinking, and let's see, would you change your answer if I just gave you one portion? You can only have offense or defense. You could not just be like, Yainer mm-hmm. is fixed both defensively and offensively, which I mean, I think that that's a great value. I think mm-hmm. because also him being good defensively, I think that helps further your pitching, yeah. right? With him, you know, framing, calling games and such would be huge. But would it change if I go, you can only have him, as a catcher defensively, or you can only have him hit better?
I would absolutely change my answer.
Okay.
I think, what
would it be?
I think it would be Christian Walker.
Though. At the plate.
Yeah. You might also getting votes would be Yordan, but I expect Yordan, to recover. But if you could just magically do it overnight, I would say Christian Walker 1, Yordan 2, but I expect Yordan to make that run.
Yeah, that's fair. And a fair text that comes in from the 832, a majority of the stolen bases are because the pitcher is, you know, getting the ball.
I wouldn't
to
say
the
majority, slow. But some.
It's yeah. together. It's both yeah. of them. Because yeah. you look at the pop time, and he literally has the slowest pop time
right.
of catchers. So it's also not helping mm-hmm. that. I mean, it's definitely not going to help him that the pitchers are getting the ball to him slow. Like, that's yeah. something that is clearly there. But then on top yeah, of that,
it's
he's not,
not just that.
He's
it's
not
majority.
Remedying it at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, this comes in, and it's hard to not go here from the 8-3-2. Yordan Alvarez, and it's not close. Especially because not only would you be fixing him and like you get him to, being better, but he also seems like he is one of the furthest away from what he typically is.
Yeah.
Like the thing that we talked about at one point for, I think it was a little bit of time earlier in the week was just mm-hmm. this lineup. I don't think it doesn't look like there's any fear for pitchers and opposing it. Yordan gets going and there is a fearsome dude in the lineup, even in a way that I think Christian Walker, it wouldn't even necessarily be.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you consider that this Astros team has been literally the worst slugging team in baseball.
Yeah.
Even when they're hitting the ball okay, it's singles. Like, you're not getting extra base hits. You're not sending it over the mm-hmm. over the wall. Yordan seems to he serves to give you that opportunity. And plus, like, and this is not something that you would be able to change really, but the inflexibility that you have because mm-hmm. Yordan is stashed at defense as a designated hitter rather.
Yeah.
It hurts even more when Yordan is so away from his typical ability to swing the bat.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that would be huge, especially because like you're going to get runners in scoring position with him up. It seems like, obviously with Altuve, he's been pretty good swinging the bat, getting on base. Isak Paredes has at least seen pitches, like been able to draw some walks in some of that. Like, he's had opportunities with guys on base. You just haven't been able to make anything of it.
No, I get it. And again, maybe I'm just assuming too much, assuming that he's going to get back, to that type of player. So Yordan is, he said it's Yordan and it's not close. Yeah, if you expect him to be struggling all year long, yes, sure. It's important. But I guess it's how you look at it.
No, and that's a very fair point is that, Yordan, he will get to that point where he is hitting really well. I think it's just the immediacy of knowing that mm-hmm. starting tonight, boom, he's hitting. That would make me feel a lot more comfortable. So that is kind of an easy answer.
Is that yours?
I think so. Like, that's the place that I'm well. But I want to examine this a little further. Figgy, do you have an answer? Because on the text line, I don't know if you're doing a bit here, 713. And if you are, I appreciate it. It said, Jake's bat needs more 300 average magic. Just put that average on. But that is fair. Like, to go in the opposite direction, if you're like, hey, don't give it to the guys that you know will eventually come along. They will come along. Give it to somebody who you know has issues. Is there a dude who you, whose bat you don't typically trust more than Jake Myers? Like, if you have that guy hitting at the bottom of your lineup, or maybe you move him up at some point with him hitting better, especially with the speed that he gives you, like, does that not change the way that you view this Astros offense?
It does. You know, the problem is, like, some of these bigger hitters are not hitting. And I don't know how much you expect Jake Myers to bat. I mean, he's the second leading hitter on the team behind Altuve right now.
Just on, like, actual hits or, like, average?
Average. Even OPS.
Yeah, because second is Isak Paredes with 11 hits.
But he's batting 276 with an OPS.
He's tied for third, though, with eight hits.
Yeah, OPS is 708. You know, you take that.
That's
from
downright
Jake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. From him Hold on.
All day long. I don't know how much you expect that. Let me, Figgy, do you have one first of all?
Yeah, I was going to say Jeremy Pena, because I feel like that's somebody that, especially looking at his rookie year, I thought that dude was about to be a star.
Yeah.
Like, his defense is good. I just thought that would have been probably a better replacement for Carlos Correa.
No, look, so, I think that's a good one.
I just think if he had his bat going, that's a scary lineup.
Well, we've mentioned it several times since before the season. Like, players that you are counting on to make a step up. One of them was Yonner Diaz.
Yeah.
The most important one to me was Jeremy Pena. Like, if he's that guy again, then everything changes.
Yeah.
So, everybody's gone to the bats. And, you mentioned Yainer to start because of the defensive aspect of it. Is there anything defensively or even pitching-wise, that you would consider, hey, sprinkle the pixie dust in lieu of any of these guys that we've talked about batting-wise?
Yes, there is. How long, what has it been, 3-4 years we've been asking, is Fromber an ace? Be an ace.
That's the place that you go with it, huh?
Yes, you need that one guy. You need that one guy that is just going to just be a killer. You know, there every time he pitches, the stands fill up and the batters sit down. You know, he's had some tendencies of being a killer like that. But how about if you could just rely? I mean, this city knows ace pitchers very, very well. You know, every time Roger Clemens would go out. And by the way, Roger Clemens is going to be joining the drive.
Yes, he will. 4 p.m. This 4 p.m. to hear Roger Clemens.
You knew what you were going to get. Roy Oswalt. More recently, obviously, Verlander. You know, even you just go down the list. Like, that dude was going to get it done no matter what. Fromber hadn't been that. If you have that guy, I think it helps.
That's interesting, because I think I would go along with what this text comes in from the 361, where I'm maybe trying to bring some more guys up to the level, as opposed to, like, make Fromber into a better player, which, I mean, I think that's a fair perspective to take. Renaud Blanco, right? Like, to have another guy, especially as your depth is already being tested.
Hell, McCullers.
Yeah.
You need some pixie dust. You need a pile of pixie dust.
That's that the injury pixie dust.
Yeah. 832 said, Prime McCullers Jr., having him back on paper, win on the day, you win every time he starts. That kind of speaks to what you're talking about there. But, yeah, having Ronel Blanco, like, be consistent, especially as a guy who, you know, bloomed late and has not bloomed for a particularly long amount of time, for you to be certain that he's going to be a robust part of your rotation. I mean, you're expecting him to, but how much – you're hoping for him to be that, and that's where he is situated, but I don't know how much you believe that is, like, a given per se. That'd be cool. Bullpen. If you go bullpen, would you go to your kind of one of your two guys, right? And in the same kind of comparison of Fromber versus Ronel, where you go, like, make the best better, or bring one of the, I guess, lower options up to standard.
That's another good question.
Do you go Hader / Abreu, or do you go to someone like Oakert or one of these guys that is in the pen, but kind of nebulous, and try and bring them up to a level?
That is a really good question.
Who I was thinking about when y'all brought up
who, Hader?
No, I was thinking Hader or Abreu. I'm leaning more towards Abreu.
There's a lot of recency bias against Abreu right now.
Yeah.
But I don't mind that.
I feel like if those two were strong, then I think the bullpen might be all right.
Yeah, and you know, you've gotten some good stuff out of, like, most of the others, and, you know, obviously a couple of exceptions. Yeah, I might go Abreu on that. You know, just got that one guy that can just set up everything for Hader and make it a 7-inning game.
Or close it out in a day where Hader's not available or what have you. Yeah, that would be really good if you had that. unfortunately, we don't have the magic, but hopefully they find the magic somewhat. Do we know when the torpedo bats come in? Not to say that they are the panacea.
That's funny you said. Didn't they say they were going to start using
this series?
Yeah,
when they got back home, and they are back home now. Yeah. So let's keep an eye out.
You sit here waiting on these bats.
Waiting on the torpedo bats.
We don't even know if they work. Like, we really and truly don't, because the Yankees had that one series, and where are the Yankees?
Yeah. Regular. We waiting on that like an Amazon package.
Plus, people been using these since last year as well, right? All right.
You think they got the notification? Oh, the bats in.
Check your Amazon locker.
Is at your front door.
That's right. From the 346. Put the dust on Joe Espada to make all the right moves. Get the best out of the players. I like that. Outside of the box thinking. I like what you're doing there, 346. Mm-hmm. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, I don't know. I don't think we call this outside of the box thinking. This feels like it's right in the MO that Nick Caserio set up for this organization. An extension for Jalen Petrie. Let's talk more about whether you like it, whether you don't. What does it mean for the team going forward? Jalen Petrie, 3-year extension. We'll talk more about it next.